I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
If you get lucky, you might hear an ad about dick pills.
Wait, so we can make jokes about the ad breaks here? I thought we have to, like, take those seriously. I didn't know that we could do that. No, we'll be right back. Yeah, hey, I
don't know. I think we could do a serious cut into it, too.
Can I plug my OnlyFans site, then?
Welcome, everybody, to Let's Get Weird Sports Podcast. I know it has been a while since we've gotten weird with y'all, and it's been so long that I have actually attended a live sporting event. What's that all about, Paul?
Wow. You know, this may catch on. This could be a trend, attending live sporting events.
It was still strange because I covered some high school football back in the fall, but the last game I did was October, and for me, not going to a single basketball game for an entire season at any level, high school, college, or pro, if you had told me that I was going to do that for an entire season, I would have asked you exactly when I went into the coma.
Yeah, it's weird. As of this recording, the last time I was at a sporting event was March 7th, Penn State at Northwestern basketball. Although Larry and I went to a Chicago Dogs game last summer.
Oh, yeah. Well, that now, counts.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, I would say that counts. I mean, they gave us great seats. You know, with those minor league teams, like, you can do that pretty well. It's easy because it's social distancing in normal times anyway.
Or if you go to a Marlins game.
You beat me to the punch there. I was about to say the White Sox. Well, they've been social distancing since before it was cool.
It's funny you mentioned that because I've already got some tickets for summer games this year. And then when we're finally able to go down to Miami again to see my mother-in-law, we're definitely going to go to a Marlins game. And honestly, it's not going to be any different from every Marlins game. I've been to a Marlins game on opening day. Those were the largest crowds that I've seen at Marlins Park or Lone Depot Park, excuse me. I got to use the proper terminology now.
Oh my God, it sold out its name?
Yeah, finally they got a corporate sponsor.
I was hoping it would be like Gatorland Zoo Park or something.
Personally, I'm wanting it to be Gnocchi Barato Park, but that's a very, very, very niche reference, and you have to live in the Miami area to know what Gnocchi Barato is. So
we don't speak of the state of Florida on this podcast.
Gnocchi Barato is translated literally to shit, that's cheap. And they have absolutely everything you can possibly imagine there available. You can get like the guayabera, you can get the all white linen suit, you can get the bata de casa, you can get a laptop computer for $100. Sure, it probably has Windows 95 on it. I believe they literally have a daycare on site. You could get your marriage license there. You can get your divorce papers there. They have everything you need. It is like a redneck Cuban Walmart. It is freaking amazing. And if anybody ever goes to Miami, they need to visit this place. It is required. I love it. It is fantastic.
I would hit that place up. That the more you describe it, the more interested I am in going.
One of these times I'm going to get the white linen suit without Liz knowing.
Unless you're Tom Wolfe or the hip-hop star Mace, I'm not sure a white suit can ever be pulled off by anybody.
I can pull it off. I'm a fashion trendsetter.
You are the Midwest Pitbull. What can we say?
Dale. But speaking of social distancing and staying in crowds apart, We're going to be talking tonight about a couple of weird things. It's really a bit of a hybrid topic, if you will. We're going to start off with some spring football, and not so much in the, oh, yes, where this player's looking good or whatnot. It's the spring football of, okay, why the hell are we doing this? Why is this marketed?
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you want a podcast that is about, well, the second string offensive guard position battle is looking like this, and, you know, quarterback blah, 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 took the reps of the first string in practice number four, then you can go elsewhere. Because the thing is, like, spring football practice does matter to the team and the players and the coaching staff, and that is the only human beings it should matter to. Like, I don't at me, don't whatever me on this, but how much your community gets into spring football, like how high the attendance for the spring, because it's not a spring game. They call it a spring game. It's an inter-squad scrimmage. How good the attendance is for that scrimmage is inversely related to what there is to do and where you live.
I kind of like spring football, but I'm a little bit weird in that. And I think it's because Purdue doesn't make a huge deal about it. They're like, yeah, you can come out to the spring game. It's free. You just walk in. And it's nice because it's usually one of the first nice days after winter and everything. So it's like, oh, get to go outside. My pale hide gets sunburnt because, you know, I look at the sun and catch fire. But yeah, you go to spring football, it's kind of nice. You just enjoy the family. It's very laid back. It's very relaxed and whatnot. But in terms of, like, the competitive nature of it and whatnot, I know one of the things that does turn people off is you really don't know what the scoring is sometimes. I know a lot of the schools try to have the traditional spring game where they pick teams and whatnot. But there have been a number of times with Purdue, it's like the, well, we don't have enough healthy offensive linemen to do this, so we're going to have the modified Stableford Duchess of Queensbury scoring system. And it just gets confusing at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge thing. Like, my issue so much isn't with spring football. It's the idea of all these RSNs and all these league-owned TV networks. They have to throw something on TV, so they do this. It's the idea of hyping it up and marketing it as if it's a big thing. And it's not a spectator sport. It's just not, like, rebrand the spring game as family fun fest or fan fest and a chance to come, you know, see the team play sort of in a quasi way, see the team play for free. And that's fine. And I tried watching the game, you know, Illinois is like Monday night football. It was the first time Illinois had allowed some fans in for a revenue sport, right? Maybe even for a sport since the pandemic began. They did actually have band cheerleaders, pom-poms. Like, it had the soundtrack of football. The tickets they gave away went pretty fast. People wanted them, but I don't know. After like 20 to 25 minutes, I'm like, I can't listen to Jay Layman, and, you know, this is stupid. This is kind of boring. But anyway, I did the Bielema media Zoom call heading into that, and I asked him about that very topic of scoring and what goes into it. And, you know, I liked his answer. I think Bielema is a big step up from Lovey when it comes to the talking game. And he said, I just try to play good old American football and I try to not think about it too much and try to have a game. And what they did was orange was the first stringers. Their points counted for normal. Blue was the second stringers, and the first stringers counted normal. The second stringers, their points counted double. That was pretty much it, and the rest was kind of. And then, of course, the white team are the non-contact guys. But every school does it different. Every program does it from year to year. It's different, and it's impossible to keep up with, and that takes a lot of the fun out of it.
There's always the whole inherent risk of you see players get injured in this and it ends up being costing him a season too, because even with the relaxed spring football, you know, these guys aren't going, you know, 100% all out. And a lot of the teams are having, oh, this player had minor surgery, so of course they're not playing. But inevitably, you get some guy that gets hurt. I know there was one year where DJ Knox tore his ACL in the spring game, and it's like, oh, great. You know, 6 months before the season, we just lost our starting running back. That's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. Mikey Duda got hurt at least once in the spring for the season, I think maybe twice. A lot of times, and what you're watching are, like, backups, and the idea that 90,000 people in Ohio would show up for it and pay $10 to $15 to do so is ridiculous.
I think part of that comes from the affordability of it, though, because you have Ohio State and their tickets are insanely expensive. They have the wait list and whatnot. And so it's kind of a design of, hey, this is more affordable to, quote, see the Buckeyes, if you will, than just going to their regular game against directional Ohio.
There's also something to be said about, you know, call me old school, call me old timer. Maybe this is get off my lawn, but football, it's a fall thing. It's an autumn thing. Like, I remember during a spring semester at U of I writing a column for the Daily Illini, which was, this is the Kurt Kitner era, and, like, it was just basically, oh, we have a passing game for the first time since the 1980s, and reminiscing about when Illinois would crank out these pro quarterbacks over and over again. And a classmate said to me, KS spring football? KS football Americano de la Primera? No, he's like, why are you writing about football? He said to me, he's like, what the hell? There's no spring football.
Well, and this year obviously is different. You have, as you said, that Illinois had their Monday night football game. I don't know if Purdue even had so much as a scrimmage. I saw that they were doing practices and everything, but there was no traditional spring game for a second year in a row. And honestly, I didn't even think about it until the other day. I was like, oh yeah, are we having a spring game or not? But there was nothing there.
Yeah, Northwestern's the same. Northwestern's not doing this year. I remember going to one a few years ago where there was like a tornado warning or a tornado watch, and it cleared the stadium. Eventually, the weather got a lot better, and they started playing again. No one came back. Pat Fitzgerald said the exact one year he said, we don't have enough offensive linemen to play that are healthy, exactly what you had said before. And I don't know. I kind of applaud that. I mean, Northwestern never drew a lot of people for their spring scrimmages. And, you know, I mean, you could even say don't hold it for that reason. Like, why open the stadium? Why pay people? Why it's a losing venture? And that's fine, too.
And I've seen it both ways because I know, like you said, weather can be a factor. There was one year where Purdue, we got up there to go and they called it off. And they ended up playing the scrimmage behind closed doors in the Mollenkopf, which is our indoor practice facility. And then the other interesting thing is here, I just saw there will be a, like, breaking news just now. There will actually be a public viewing for Purdue great Leroy Keyes. He passed away earlier this week, and there will be a public viewing in Ross-Ade Stadium this Saturday from 9 to noon. It's interesting that they're still going to be doing that in a public venue like this, but there was no spring football either. And obviously, the passing of Keyes, he's a Purdue legend and everything, is a huge factor in that. But it's interesting that they're doing that, but no game.
Yeah, that is interesting. You know, the fact that we're talking about a big man who left us and passed away this year, that actually brings me to one of my favorite spring game moments of any program, and that would be
the unveiling of the new Purdue Pete?
No, the Irish chocolate play. Lewis Nix. Anytime you get a 300-pound man scoring a touchdown, not sure what he passed away of. He was only 29. The details were kind of omitted on that, privacy concerns. But I remember when he had the Irish chocolate touchdown. I have to look up what the play was, and I know this sounds like something that would get censored out and deleted, but I did not make this up. This is true. In the blue and gold game one year, Notre Dame ran a play that was called the Drunken Irishman.
Nice.
And for the life of me, I don't remember what it was, but I remember that it existed, and these are the two things that I ever remember about any Notre Dame spring scrimmage ever.
Wow.
I mean, how many I've been to, or, you know, even the ones I didn't go to, that maybe I looked at it. Those are the only two things I could even tell you about. I can't tell you who won, or, you know, I can't tell you if Dane Crist had 300 yards passing or whatever.
The biggest ones that I can remember are, like I said, DJ Knox tearing his ACL. And then 10 years ago this week was when Purdue decided that they were going to replace Purdue Pete with a new design, and it lasted all of like 3 days.
Why? Was there a backlash or something?
Oh, goodness, yes. And I know Juan, our former producer and scientist out in California, I believe he said that even Morgan Burke found out, our athletic director, at like a softball game, that this was going to go down, and even he was upset about it. And Morgan Burke never got upset about anything. But there was such a backlash to it that I think by the following Tuesday, they're like, yeah, we're going to maintain the same Pete. So they ended up wasting a couple $1,000s doing this.
Did he, was he like Clark? Did he not have pants on? Because that could be a problem. They wanted a traditional Santa Claus with pants.
Well, it was weird because he had a silver helmet, and he had the more muscular build as opposed to the just regular guy build in a uniform. And I think the craziest thing was the just dead emotionless look on his face as opposed to the current Pete, which is the I'm going to, you know, kill your family in your sleep look.
Which is what you want in a mascot.
Well, of course. I mean, but yeah, those are the two biggest things that I remember about spring football, and the only notable things. I guess I should say that one of the cooler things that I do remember of spring football, this goes way back. The first time I went to spring football was my senior year at Purdue, and they were giving away, it was the same day as the NFL draft, and they were basically putting the picks as they came through up on the scoreboard because noted football enthusiast Drew Brees was getting drafted that day in some point.
You know, that kid may go up and he may do something someday in the league.
Yeah, he might. I hope it worked out for him. I don't know anything else that's happened for the guy.
That's a good point. I remember one year the Northwestern spring game was the same weekend as the draft, and it gave, I mean, when I did the Pat Fitzgerald press call, I just talked about draft stuff. I didn't get into that. And you can just be like, he's a high motor guy. Shows up every day.
Well, we can't forget the random spring game heroes where you'll inevitably have like the sixth string walk-on running back who just goes nuts because, you know, the top two guys are getting rested and the next two promising freshmen are only get a handful of carries, but somebody's got to play. And so you'll have the sixth string walk on. It's like, oh, he had 17 carries for 130 yards. He might be a dark horse to play. What's his background? Well, it turns out he was from rural Alaska and played a high school game against actual bears at one point.
That's true. I mean, you know, Juno Central High is they could be a powerhouse. They'll snip. You know, when you take on Anchorage Northwest Catholic, they're some great sleeper prospects have come out of there. That concludes the extent of my knowledge of Alaskan cities. Nome, that's the third one. But honestly. Okay, I think there is one man out there who did spring football right, and he's a man who is much maligned. He had his run, and now he is no longer within our conference. But I think he did one thing there's two that really stand out in my mind. He's a guy that was at a traditional Big Ten power, and he now coaches at a mid-major. Bo Pelini.
Oh, well now.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when the tape came out where Bo Pelini was cursing out the reporters and saying all this with his temper, and some of his defenders were like, hey, you know, well, here's this year where he let this little sick kid run a play and score a touchdown in the spring game. I thought that was wonderful. But the moment I'm talking about is, as we have Katz as guest hosts on this show, the famous Kitty Pelini moment when he came out of the tunnel and he Lion King'd the cat and, you know, held it up for all 40,000 or whatever. 50,000.
Right. I forgot he did that.
And it led to my finest Big Ten Media Day moment ever. It was at the Hilton Towers that summer. So it was a few months after that. And I asked him, like, an actual legit question about Randy Gregory in the ballroom session, but I prefaced the question with a joke question. My first part was, how is the cat doing? Did the cat come to Chicago with you? Mm-hmm. And the great part of that was when I read, like, all the – because, you know, a lot of people, they do the same BS, like, highlights of Media Day, best sound bites, or notes and quotes from Media Day, like, roundups. Every single one that I read from every outlet led with the cat. And it was funny because it was like, you know, I did ask him an actual question too, but no one cared about that. They only cared about because Bo played along because he said, the cat is up in my hotel room. It's resting, sleeping, and enjoying Chicago.
Wow. Well, speaking of enjoying Chicago, that gives us a chance to give a word from our sponsors. And I would like to give a shout-out to our sponsor, Benny's Beverage Depot. Benny's Beverage Depot, for when you're watching college football in the spring and you just want to get blackout drunk outdoors for the first time in months.
Well, that does make watching spring football more enjoyable, sure.
But seriously, though, we have some fine sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And we're back, and unfortunately we're not actually sponsored by Benny's Beverage Depot, but I really wish that we were, because as we were discussing in the break, Benny's is just an outing, really. They have such great selection and everything, so, but while we're waxing poetic about State of Illinois liquor stores, we're ready to transition to the second half of our topic today, and it's somewhat spring football adjacent. We're going to be talking metric spring football, and one of the few things that Rick Pitino was able to last longer than was the European Super League.
My publisher of my book today said, you know, I think you're going to have to do something about the Super League and throw it in there. So, and I'm like, well, okay, it's over now, so that's perfect. So it'll be easy for me to write up. But in the intro, I said, the Super League outlasted Britney Spears' first marriage.
Oh, wow.
Because that was 55 hours she was married before it was annulled.
So this thing is officially dead now, right?
Yes, the Juventus chief said it cannot go forward. I believe all the Spanish teams have pulled out. Maybe Real Madrid has not, but they only had 12 sign on. The Germans, I know the Germans were recruited and they were said no, but then there's reports thinking that maybe Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund would sign on. They thought they would get PSG. So that never happened. They only had 12. Just to reset here, European Super League, was a coalition of England's big six: Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool, Tottenham Hotspur, Arsenal, Chelsea, plus Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, and Barcelona in Spain's La Liga. And in Italian Serie A, Juventus, Inter Milan, and AC Milan tried to establish what was a midweek competition, a tournament that would rival or perhaps lead to the end of the Champions League. Now, all of these teams that did this, they wanted to stay in their domestic leagues. And the domestic leagues were saying, if you pull this crap, we're kicking you out. So
fair.
We're not having it. And then UEFA, that's the governing body of Europe. They run the Champions League. And then just to reset for everyone else, the Champions League is like the NCAA tournament in that it's a tournament where the better teams go from each different conference. And then they also run the Europa League, which is like the NIT, which is the second tier kind of thing. So UEFA was trying to shut this down. It was just a total mess. And I handed in the final edit of my manuscript the day before this broke. And I looked at this thinking like I would have to rewrite so much. But I also thought, well, this is such garbage. No one's going to stand for this. And I don't think it'll actually ever happen. And here we are. It didn't even last 3 days. And that is a big W for us as normal everyday people and as fans, because it's rare for the fans to fight big business, and it's even rarer for the fans to win. And that's exactly what they did. This is the European Super League was something that no one and absolutely no one except for the owners of this of these big clubs wanted. The players didn't want it. The managers didn't want it. It's so rare to see everybody agree on something.
And it's so strange because they kind of already have it with the Champions League. These teams are in the Champions League year in and year out. I know, like, Manchester United, because by virtue of, well, sucking in the regular season the last couple of years, has been down in the Europa League quite a bit. It's still like the highest of the high. You get to the final eight of the Champions League, and usually it's seven of these teams that are going to be in it anyway, and that would have been in the Super League anyway. It's always Real Madrid. It's always Barcelona. Excuse me. it's always like Juventus and. Liverpool has been up there of late, of course, and PSG, we're going to lose in the quarterfinals team every year, and of course Bayern Munich, but you already had it. It's like, okay, so they want to lose the risk of losing to Porto. Ooh, wow, congratulations.
Yeah, it was just the idea that, and it was funny, when the news broke, there were matches happening, and Arsenal, who sit in ninth place, and you have to be in top four to make it, they were losing to Fulham at the time, and Fulham's going to get relegated. They're, I think, 17th or 18th. United ended up winning, but they were tied with Brighton, that's lower table at the time. The idea is just basically killing the concept of meritocracy, accountability, responsibility. It's that we could go to the champ, like this new bastardization of the Champions League, this new mutant strain of the Champions League, we can go to it regardless of where we finish, even though we already do finish typically high up. It's like saying, yeah, we're the richest, most powerful clubs, and we do get that sweet, sweet Champions League payout. I believe it's around 50, last hour was like 50 million pounds. Check your conversion rate. That's probably like 65, 70 million you get for going to it. Mm-hmm. And they just said, no, well, then we'll keep the rest of the money. And, it led to a lot of great jokes over the weekend when Liverpool took an early lead on Monday, and someone said Liverpool is getting closer to qualifying for a competition that they're already in. And then Jose Mourinho was sacked by Tottenham the day after the announcement. And it's like, Jose Mourinho, the one and only Super League manager to ever be fired.
Well, especially since you can also backdoor into the Champions League too. Because remember, Arsenal can get in by winning the Europa League this year.
Yeah, that's right. And United got in one year. They finished sixth because they won the Europa League. And then if you get bounced from the Champions League, you can go down to the Europa League. I mean, the system is already set up to favor the big boys as it is. And it was a matter of they just wanted more. It just really struck a chord with people because the concept of promotion and relegation and, you know, someday, I mean, United are going to finish second. It seems pretty certain they'll finish second. And they lost to Sheffield United, who are one of the worst Premier League teams in history. They're already relegated, and they're way down there. And Leicester City, 2016, 5,000-1 shot, won the title. And 2 years before that, they were even in another division down. So you start this idea of taking away where, you know, you make it a participation trophy because, you know, everybody made the joke. A lot of people made jokes about college football. And that's true because it's a great natural analogy. And I saw like Arsenal and Tottenham in this thing would be what Oklahoma and Notre Dame are in the playoff.
Except for, you know, Oklahoma and Notre Dame can make the playoff. I mean, Tottenham has never even won the Premier League. They haven't won the title since, what, King Henry VIII was on the throne?
So the Victorian era. Maybe William Pitt the Elder was...
Lord Palmerston!
Pitt the Elder! they last won it in 1961. They did have a great Champions League run.
They got to the final
where they lost to Liverpool, right? but they have not won a trophy of any sort since 2008.
Could they win like the second cup this year, the League Cup?
Oh yeah, like the Junior Varsity Cup. Yeah, that's Sunday, and they play City in the final on Sunday.
Yeah, and I'm sure that some of our listeners out there are just completely and utterly lost with all these different competitions and cups and everything. If you're one of the top European teams, you can end up playing in, I think it's 5 competitions over the course of a single season, because in England they have the League Cup, which is limited to the top 4 leagues on the pyramid, and then you have the FA Cup, where in theory Bob's Pub from Worcestershire-upon-Tyne can go all the way to the final and win it.
It would probably be like Harry's and Emma's Pub, because every fourth male in Britain is named Harry and every fourth woman is named Emma.
But yes, they have the FA Cup, which, think of the FA Cup in relation to baseball as if every tiny team across the entire country could get into one all-in tournament. And winner take all, each round goes along, and the major league teams didn't come in until like the last 4 or 5 rounds or whatnot, but it has as many as like, what, 700-800 teams in it?
Oh, it's insane. We had, this year saw the biggest lopsided match ever. It was Tottenham. At this time, Tottenham was actually top of the table. Table is what we call standings. Tottenham is actually in first place in the fall, like even into December, but around this time they were top 4 and they played something called Marine, which is maybe the 5th or 6th biggest club in the Liverpool area. And it was like number 5 versus number 160 or something. And it was really cool because it was at their place and some guy who lives next door to the ground can just watch it on his yard.
Yeah, because couldn't he basically climb under his roof?
pretty much like they're just, I don't even know how many people, probably seats like 200 or 300. They put a shot on the crossbar early, so they came close to taking a lead.
That's one of your competitions, and then you have the Premier League itself, which I wish this would have been the one year to do it. I wish the Big Ten had gone with a Premier League style schedule for basketball this past year of 26 games, complete round robin. Everybody plays everybody else twice, once at home and once on the road.
Yeah, screw non-conference. They should have just done that.
Yeah, you know, that would have been, this would have been the year to do it. And then you have the Champions League or the Europa League, depending on what you qualify for, which there's now going to be a third European League. I didn't know if you knew that.
The Club World Cup?
No, the Club World Cup is if you win the Champions League and you go to it. So it takes like 2 years to qualify for the Club World Cup. There's going to be a league below the Europa League.
No, this is news to me. I actually didn't know this. So it's like a CBI or a CIT?
Yeah, it's the Europa Conference League.
And wow, I'm sure Real Valladolid and VfL Wolfsburg are gonna dominate this thing.
Well, it's because the Europa League itself will be reduced from 48 to 32 teams at the group stage. And then it's pretty much like give clubs from lower-ranked UEFA members a chance to progress to later stages as opposed to consistently getting knocked out by Athletic Bilbao in...
Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Yeah, just Gladbach went deep in Champions League recently. They did pretty well. But, oh, yeah, actually, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because that goes to show you just how massive this story was that had the European Super League had such reverberations all over the world and dominated news cycles because it totally overshadowed what set it off in the first place. And that was they made their announcement hours before UEFA made their changes to their competitions. And that was obviously one. I mean, I knew they were going to expand it to I knew they were going to expand the field for Champions League, but I didn't know that they were going to add a third tier competition. And all that got lost in the shuffle of this.
Yeah, it sounds like the Conference League could be pretty cool, and it's because you're still managing. That's the other tricky thing about the Champions League and UEFA and whatnot is they're not just managing sports leagues from one country. I believe it's across 54 countries are official members of UEFA. From,
yeah, that sounds about right.
From, you know, obviously Russia, the largest country on the planet, to San Marino and Andorra, each have football associations, and they even participate in World Cup qualifying. That's right, Otis. I'm surprised by you too.
Yeah, Otis is just like, you didn't talk about Ligue 1, or he's like, Otis is contributing tonight. Otis is like, you didn't talk about AS Monaco, the team of the Principality, my favorite side.
Yes, well, they're in Ligue 1. Ligue 1.
Is it? Leon.
And then you have Serie A, which is the top Italian league. And of course, and one of my favorite teams to USA is Shakhtar Donetsk.
Yeah, where are, I forgot where they are.
They're in Donetsk. They're Ukraine. Ukraine is game to you?
Oh, Ukraine is strong. Ukraine not weak, Ukraine strong.
Remember, their national anthem is Ukraine has not yet perished and has been parenthetical despite the best efforts of the Russians and the Germans.
Oh man, I feel sorry for them.
So, and a lot of people also don't realize that the Champions League, the Champions League, they think of it as the 32 group, the 32 team, 8 groups of 4 and everything else, which that's where you get all the lucrative money and everything. They still have qualifying from each of the different associations and countries throughout where you can have the San Marino winner reach the Champions League, which would be a dream for them because then like Barcelona and Real Madrid or Real Madrid, depending on the group stage, would have to go and play at this dinky-ass little San Marino stadium.
No, it's great. I mean, Atalanta, which sounds like somebody's typo for Atlanta. They made it to – did they make it to the Final Four last – yeah. I think they either made it to the Final Eight or Final Four last year, and they're, you know, typically a mid to lower table Italian side. And then United lost to something called Istanbul Başakşehir.
Başakşehir, yeah.
I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I mean,
I'm looking at all the teams that were in the Champions League this year, and even in the, you know, you have your preliminary rounds and your early qualifying rounds, there's some just great names, and this goes, I mean, you can play in Reykjavik, Iceland, or you can play in whatever the capital of Kazakhstan is.
I just know that they have the best potassium. All other Central Asian countries have inferior potassium than Kazakhstan.
But yeah, you have something called the Young Boys, which was a Swiss champion. You have Dynamo Zagreb. And I love the Dynamo or Lokomotiv or Metallurgist from the old Eastern Bloc countries. They're fantastic.
Yeah, there's so many great names. Red Star Belgrade, CSKA Moscow, TSG Hoffenheim,
which
Club Bruges.
Wasn't TSG Hoffenheim like the level 4 club in Germany that some billionaire bought and was like, all right, I'm just going to sink a bunch of money into this and buy players and work our way up to the Champions League?
That sounds like pretty much the business model of a lot of, I believe it. I mean, you could be right. I'm not sure, but that's what a lot of owners are doing. I mean, well, that's what this was about, because you had these sugar daddy owners and the ringleaders of this thing. Most of them were Americans, and you know, in America, sports are, you know, owners will say, hey, you know what? We want a new stadium. We want the city to pay for it. Oh, you're not going to do it? Well, we're going to go get up and move, and we're going to go to a city that will. And that would never happen in Europe. Mm-hmm. So this is the closest thing they could try to do with that.
And see, that relates to our early topic with spring football, because of course it's related to this. I mean, there's been talk of, oh, well, Alabama and Ohio State and USC and Notre Dame should just get together and form their own conference, but we already kind of have that, really. I mean, even at the FBS level, which is separated from FCS, there's a clear line of demarcation between the Power Five schools and the Group of Five schools. I mean, how many have successfully made that jump into the Power Five, even with all the conference realignment? The only ones I can really think of are TCU and Utah.
There's a lot of reasons I hate recruiting and I don't get into it, but that's one thing, is I hate this idea like, oh, Alabama's got the number one class and Ohio State's got the number two class. It just kind of reinforces the rich get richer, and it perpetuates the cycle, and all of that publicity and all of that attention just keeps it going, and then they stay there. And then, yeah, who does break through?
And that's why, you know, if you were to redo college football right now, there is no damn way Purdue would be a major conference team. None. But we're kind of grandfathered in because, well, we started the Big Ten. It was our president that got everybody together back in like 1896 and was like, hey, we should get together and form this athletic conference. So it's like, okay, we get the grandfather clause. We get to stay around and keep cashing the checks.
There's something to be said for what we have now, because I remember reading an article even on ESPN.com, and ESPN is totally in bed with the playoff. Like, they're not even – there's no firewall between the two, really. And even on ESPN, it said this is boring and stale, because we knew who was going to get in, and that's who got in. And that is what makes such a great natural analogy to European soccer, in that for the most part, Juventus always wins Italy. Bayern Munich is going to win Germany for the 9th straight time. PSG has won, I don't know, 7 of the last 8 or 6. Like, they almost always win. In Spain, it's pretty much one of two teams, although Atletico, you know, sneaks in there once in a while.
Or as they can be called, fake Madrid, since you have Real Madrid.
Yeah. I always, you know, whatever's like Athletico for all your sporting needs. I'm like, oh, I didn't know Athletico also sells Ace bandage wraps here in the state. Fake Madrid. I love it.
But you mentioned it's like the Premier League really is one of the few that at least has some parity. Yeah, they've got a big six, really, and then you had Leicester come through, and at least Leicester's been competitive. They're not totally just a one-hit wonder because they made the Europa League for this year, and they've got a real shot of making the Champions League this year.
And they're not the Forbes list came out, and it was the big six were all in the top 10 richest clubs in the world, but West Ham, Leicester, and Everton were in the top 20. So sorry, Leicester, you're not kids anymore. You're not a cute little underdog.
Yeah, they were at one point. I mean, they're
well, yeah, they were very recently. Yes,
still pretty impressive. I could get behind it.
I in researching the book, I found this the ultimate freezing cold take at Old Takes Exposed. It was Arlo White, the voice of the Premier League. Arlo White was it was the first year they were coming up, and he said, and they just signed this man from the Championship, Jamie Vardy. And he said, you know, he could be a decent player, probably not a national team guy or anything special, but keep an eye on him. He might be all right.
And now he's one of the better players in the entire world.
Yeah, he's only the leading scorer. And it's like not a national team player. Harry Kane's always hurt. He's their main striker whenever Kane's injured. So I thought it was a great freezing cool take. I don't know.
But yeah, it is interesting. And there is that natural parallel there. It's like I don't have you for 95% of major college football. It's got to be mind-blowing to know that an undefeated season still may not be enough to reach the playoff. I mean, look at what happened to Cincinnati this year, and look at what's happened to Central Florida, and look, and you know, Boise State all these years. It's they have to be more than perfect somehow. You have to be perfect, and you have to get the good luck of some of the blue bloods going down. I mean, we enter most. I rail against the NBA because it doesn't have any parity, but college football is the same. I mean, you enter the season, okay, well, the three of the four playoff teams are going to be Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama, and then who's going to join them?
Right, exactly. And, you know, what you're kind of talking about there with, you know, how TCU broke through, how Boise State moved up. In order to climb the polls, that means you have to start out in the bullshit poll that comes out in August pretty high. So if you're a plucky mid-major or group of five, you know, I guess they're called, people have to think your recruiting class is really good, and you have to have guys returning. You had to have been good last year so that you already have a good starting point so you can climb up. That's your only hope. And it's kind of sad in that no matter what has happened from we're old enough to remember when the national champion was crowned a week after a Fiesta Bowl game by like UPI and AP voters. And then it was the BCS after, you know, people got sick of the split dual national championships. Then it was the BCS. Now it's the playoff. But at the end of the day, it's always about someone getting screwed and someone getting left out.
And how do you even solve it? Do you do a playoff expansion? What do you do? You even have – look at Ohio State. They have not won a big – they have not lost a Big Ten game since they got Rondale Moore in 2018.
Yeah, it's such a joke. Like I was telling – I think it was Juan actually when I made jokes about Michigan being – a basketball school, and Juan's like, it's always been a basketball school. And I'm, well, yeah, kind of, but for his generation, sure. But I remember like the Woody and Bo 30 for 30 or whatever documentary it was, and I sort of remember Big Two Little Eight, and when the game meant something and Michigan was on par. And now it's a freaking joke.
It's to the point where you look at those big three of Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State. For the most part, they can even lose a game and they're not that affected by it. I know that Ohio State was a little bit different because, number one, they lost to Purdue, and it was a decent Purdue team, but it was a Purdue team that had lost to Eastern Michigan at home just a few weeks before that. And also the margin, so it's just if you lose your one game, and as long as you don't lose it by too much, you're fine. And those are the only three that really can say that.
Yeah, I mean, after Notre Dame got blown out again, as we all knew they were going to do, because they got blown out in the ACC title game the week before, Brian Kelly said after the Bama game, don't anybody go jumping off of ledges. You know, we'll get back here. We promise you we'll get back here. And I'm just like, no, it's not the getting there that's the problem. It's what you do when you get there. It's it's anyone. The point of a reservation is to hold the reservation. Anyone can just take the reservation. It's holding it that matters.
Right. And so the playoff has been around since 2014. It's just absurd because you have Alabama's been in there six times. They're 8-3. Clemson's been in there six times. They're 6-4. So that's six of the seven playoffs have had either Clemson or Alabama, have had Clemson and Alabama in it. Ohio State, four appearances. Oklahoma, four appearances. Out of those four, out of those four schools, only three others have even won a playoff game. LSU, who won two in their undefeated season, and then Oregon and Georgia are the only other ones that have won a playoff game.
And the list of just who even has made it is ridiculous. Just think the only Michigan, the only Big Ten team to ever make it other than Ohio State is Michigan State.
And they were undefeated, and they got drilled for their trouble, too, by Alabama.
Exactly. And then, you get to something where you get, like, an all-Southern title game. That's kind of boring. None of us here really want to watch that.
Well, this year you had the potential. It didn't happen, but you had the potential to have two teams play each other three times in one year because Notre Dame and Clemson. And I don't know if that has ever happened or if it happened back in the antiquities, but
maybe it happened when like Chicago Dental School played the Providence Steamrollers or something.
Shakhtar Donetsk.
Shakhtar Donetsk, yeah. PSV Eindhoven.
I'm a big fan of FC Union Berlin. The Eisern Union.
Yeah, these names they're so fun to say, like Villarreal and just go down the table, look at like the Serie A table and like look at the crests, or go down the Bundesliga table and look at.
Well, let's not forget when Diego Maradona was playing for Napoli FC, who had a superhuman ability to inhale large amounts of, well, let's face it, cocaine, party for 8 days, and then go and play soccer, high-level soccer for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I would highly recommend everybody watch the
I thought you were going to say strongly recommend everyone do a lot of cocaine.
Coming up on a very special episode of Let's Get Weird. It's our PSA.
And now our next sponsor. That's why international soccer is so much fun, and we haven't even mentioned hooligan firms, which, can you imagine college football with hooligan firms?
Well, I've met the Ohio State fan base, so...
Hey-o! My wife is just throwing up the U right now.
Yeah, there you go. I would say that, but that's a good analogy. I interviewed this NBC executive, the guy who really brokered the deal that got the Premier League rights to NBC, and he said he compares Premier League rivalry and fan to SEC football.
I can see that, and especially since a lot of these Premier League teams are, they share a city. I mean, you have Everton and Liverpool, their stadiums are literally within sight of each other across a park.
Yeah, the North London Derby, Arsenal and Tottenham.
One of the best pieces of spite I've ever seen. Have you heard of St. Totteringham's Day?
No.
Basically, it was a fan-created holiday for Arsenal fans that they celebrate every year that Arsenal clinches finishing higher in the table than Tottenham. And go look it up sometime. There's an entire website dedicated to it where they would track it every year. And like, oh, this year's St. Totteringham's Day was April 17th.
Oh, that's phenomenal. And I love it.
There was one where they thought it was the streak was going to die because it went like 18, 19 years in a row before Tottenham finally topped in like 2 or 3 years ago. There was one where Tottenham lost on the final day to Newcastle like 6-0, and Arsenal edged them out by a point on the final day of the season, and their fans were going nuts.
That was, I think that was the year they were like guaranteed to finish second, like they thought they were, but they just utterly collapsed at the end and fell apart. Yeah. And yeah, they lost like really bad in the last couple of weeks. I think it was the Leicester year, because they got into a draw with Chelsea and the draw had this huge brawl and it was just massive, and that eliminated them. And Tottenham had maybe 2 or 3 seasons in a row where they were the last team standing between the titleists, the last possible challenger, but they just crapped the bed down the stretch, so it didn't matter.
That is one of the best parts of college football. I know we get on it and whatnot, but the best part is just the spite. And when you mention the spite, I think we can close off with this. I have to give up some credit to the EDSBS Charity Bowl just wrapped up. That's the Everyday Should Be Saturday. Run by Spencer Hall and Holly Anderson and Jason Kirk and Ryan Nanny and a few others. Every year they raise money for New American Pathways in Atlanta, Georgia. And New American Pathways is a group that helps refugees get settled here in the United States and helps them find jobs, find housing, aids them with getting citizenship and everything else. And the entire point of the EDSBS Charity Bowl is to get listeners to the Shutdown Fullcast podcast to donate money in the form of a score or to rub salt in the wounds of your rival. So, for example, this year I donated, I believe it was $124.89. And the significance of that is Purdue leads the all-time basketball series with Indiana 124-89. And they actually just wrapped it up. They raised over $800,000 this year, nearly doubling their record from last year. And they said they had 461 schools participate. Michigan by far donated the most. They always win. Because there's just this whole network of Michigan fans and Michigan alums that come in and donate. They donated like, I think it was like $89,000 alone from Michigan. But it's great to see schools get into it and battle back and forth with, like, I think Purdue finished 41st this year, and we lost Indiana after beating them last year. So as the blog manager for Hammer and Rails, I feel a personal shame in that. But like, Purdue still had like $4,000 worth of donations, which is decent for our little corner of the internet. So,
well, yeah, and as long as that's where the money goes, and as long as everybody's donating, then that's what matters, and then everybody wins.
And it's all based on spite, which is what is college sports without spite?
Well, that's what that's what the NBC guy said to me. He said when he did the SEC comparison, people say, oh, this is a matter of life or death. He's like, no, I assure you it's much more than that. I mean, that is, that's the thing about if your team didn't win in the Premier League, if your team is out of it, if your rival falls, that's great too on Championship Sunday. Maybe they get relegated. Maybe they don't make the top four. Maybe they miss out on the title. But yeah, despite what Ed Franklin Delano Roosevelt, judge me by the enemies I've made.
I can see that.
Ayn Rand, indifference, not hate, is the opposite of love.
Yeah, I can see that.
And that's actually, I think that has been totally misattributed to Ayn Rand. She didn't even come up with that, but I forgot who did. But with college football, my final thought on college football is it's always going to be the debate. That's what they want. It's a sport. It's like if First Take or Pardon the Interruption was a sport. It's no matter what the format is, they go to 8. Who's 9? Who's 9? Oh, number 9 got screwed. If they go to 16. Oh, number 17. That's how it's always been. And that's how it's always going to be. They want that because it's added attention.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but that's where we are. All right. And on that lovely note, I think we can probably shut this edition of the Let's Get Weird Sports Podcast down. What are we going to leave as a teaser for our next episode?
Well, I don't know if we've got enough material to do a pod on this guy, but a friend of mine set up his TV in the backyard to watch the tournament when it was nice out. We were hanging out there. And then I heard some stories about the six-fingered man.
Antonio Alfonseca,
yes. I guess if you go out there, there's an interview where Ron Santos interviewing him, and he thought his name was Al Fonseca. Like, he didn't realize Antonio was his name. And then they were telling me about one day he was being chased by Dale Torborg, who has, like, WWE connections. So Al Fonseca was hiding in a closet from him.
Well, didn't Antonio Al Fonseca hack somebody with a machete back in Venezuela?
I don't doubt it, given...
Oh, wait, that was Triple U, Ugeth Urbina.
Well, I think if we start to do a deep dive, maybe we could find something, but we may have to attach to something else. I don't know if we can do one on just him.
Hopefully with less murder, because like I said with Leroy Keyes when he passed away earlier this week, and rest in peace, Leroy, Purdue legend. He was the 1968 runner-up to O.J. Simpson. And it is still the largest margin of victory, first over second place in Heisman Trophy history. However, Leroy Keyes can rest that he didn't murder two people. So,
well, I'm still mad that no one decided to put something into the vaccine rollout saying that people who were found liable in a civil trial for double murder and ordered to pay $36 million are not eligible for the vaccine.
Wow.
Because that day when he was trending and it was like he showed off getting it, and I'm like, holy shit, OJ got it. I'm like, well, he is over 60 or 65, and no one decided to put in a no OJ clause.
Oh, my.
Imagine how much if they did. Imagine if the California vaccine rollout was there was a clause written OJ Simpson is last.
But you let OJ Mayo get it. Sorry, we're allowed to have one. All right. On that note, since we've talked
that was a fun day on Twitter.com. A lot of the people who a lot of stabbing jokes made that day.
Okay, now that we've laughed about a double murder.
Well, I mean, yeah, if we weren't going to hell by the time this recorded, I think we firmly booked our place now.
Oh, yes.
We should probably try to end at something a little bit more positive.
Oh, yes, definitely. So, as you said, we'll try to touch on Antonio Alfonseca maybe, or I'm sure we'll come up with another one because sports is consistently weird out there. So, for myself, for Paul, for Otis, for Ventress, who buggered off and decided that she didn't want to be on my lap anymore. And for my wife, Liz, we do thank you for listening out there. And stay weird, everybody.